Hello, this is Stuart Wilde. Welcome to a four-tape series on the mastery of money. Pulling abundance to you, or becoming wealthy, is really very much a matter of concentrating upon wealth, concentrating upon abundance. In the same way as if you concentrate upon negativity, it finds you, I have found, and I believe very deeply from within myself, that if you concentrate on abundance, if you concentrate on creativity, if you concentrate on serving people, loving them, then the universe seems to provide in great abundance and in great quantities, and the more that you receive, the more free it allows you to be. Recently, on a tour to Australia, I did a one-day seminar on the mastery of money in Melbourne, and it was a particularly fun day. And being an ex-Britisher, I think what happened was, being down there in Australia, I somehow aligned to the old British energy. It was almost like that small part of the Monty Python within me came forward. And this particular series of tapes, in parts, are hilariously funny and really, really lighthearted and very, very powerful when it comes to, like, aligning yourself to the metaphysical abundance that's within you, and of course, wrapping that with a practicality and an action plan. As you listen to these tapes, you'll probably hear me using a lot of English expressions and a few Australian ones, but it won't affect your enjoyment of them because you can kind of pick it up. For example, in one part of the tape, I remember talking about bath taps. Well, of course, we don't have bath taps in the United States. We have faucets. And in fact, actually, later on in the tape, I changed from talking about bath taps to talking about faucets. So you'll hear certain English expressions and Australian expressions, which actually, I feel, adds to the fun. Anyway, I hope you enjoy these, and I hope that they will serve you. Many people that have been to these seminars and worked with these principles that we discussed have literally dramatically changed their financial status or the abundance around them. And I had one guy go out of my seminar not that long ago, in fact, and make $250,000 in 3 weeks. So, tally-ho, good luck, and may the abundance that is everywhere manifest strongly and powerfully in your life. What we'll be discussing today, basically, is the mastery of money. I'm going to talk to you about how to manipulate reality. Now, when you say manipulate, people's little auras go bong off the ceiling because they automatically think that manipulate means evil. When you manipulate something for your own benefit and you do not infringe upon the lifestyle or the spirituality or the reality on another person, that is fine. I can only teach from my own background, which is a metaphysical background, and I can only really teach from a mystical approach. I don't teach people how to invest in stocks and shares and stuff like that. That's not my world. What I teach is I teach you a way of raising your energy, raising your perceptions, and then going back out in the marketplace. It's interesting because once you stay in a place like, for example, Australia, you've been in a couple of weeks, you meet people who've done the seminar, and then they've gone out and lived their life. And somebody came up to me last night in Sydney and told me how the very following morning after the seminar, they doubled their prices. They just went right in, and they threw away the old price list, and they doubled their prices. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do, actually or metaphorically, is to double your price. And what you'll have to do to double your price, sometimes you can double your price because you've genuinely undervalued yourself. You know, you've genuinely misunderstood your worth in the world. And sometimes, the other way to double your price is to double the amount of energy that you exude. If you double the amount of energy, then doubling your price is no problem. What we look at in a metaphysical or subliminal or inner way of looking at money is we look at energy. When you transfer a product to another person, you are transferring energy. You're not transferring the product. When you understand that they come to experience you, not the product, then all of a sudden, there isn't any limit to what you can charge. Now, I am not suggesting that what we're doing here is inventing a way of ripping the world off. All I'm saying is that if you have a very strong energy and you're very pleasing to be with, you have a power, you have a divinity within you, you understand the world, you understand yourself, you come out of this absolute limitless energy that we talked about the other night, and you have this feeling within you
then when a person walks into your store, let's say, and they want to get two Marty Swivel toggle flanges in green and pink and take them home, they actually experience a healing. A healing goes on within them, having been in your store. The fact that they came in for the toggle flanges was just an excuse for them to come and get the energy, to drink from the tap, so to speak. And if somebody heals your leukemia, how much can you give them away of money? I mean, this is priceless to you. If somebody makes you feel better, if somebody makes you feel good, if you walk out the door with your two little toggle flanges, okay, they cost $1.99, but the arthritis in your knee is 30% better, then all of a sudden, what is it worth? You see, now we look at money as human beings in terms of emotion. Money measures emotion. That's all it measures. It does not measure intrinsic value, because intrinsic value does not exist outside the consciousness of man. A tiger in a forest doesn't have any intrinsic value about the tree or the forest or its food supply. You know, we only us consider things to have intrinsic value, but in fact they don't have value. They're all there all of the time. I mean, they're basically, I suppose, a gift from God. But you look at a building, you say, well, this is intrinsic value because this building will generate a rent roll of $300,000 a year, so it's saleable for $3 million. And $3 million gives me this amount of emotional security or this amount of emotional wherewithal. And so when you understand that the world deals with money only with emotion, then what you do to master money is you step out of the emotion. And what we're going to look at today is dealing with money so that A, we're not manipulating people, B, we're not restricting ourselves or restricting others, and C, we step out of fear into an understanding where true power lies. Okay, then if you lock these simple techniques into your life, you go back out tomorrow morning, on Sunday morning, Monday morning, and you understand what motivates the people. You can kind of read their minds. You understand what they want. When you understand what they want, you give it to them. And then you build them. It's as simple as that. So the whole process that we're looking at today is this thing that we've talked about all week here in Melbourne. It's basically understanding the hidden side of life, okay, the subliminal side, raising your energy, even though knowing the person that you're going to be dealing with does not see the energy you've raised, but they feel it. They feel it. There's not a person in the world that doesn't feel those feelings. They feel it. You raise your energy. People come from everywhere, like out of the woodwork and over the walls and down the chimney and hanging off the ceiling to be with you, because this power is such a fantastic power. And then when they show up, you bill them. It's as simple as that. You bill them. So we will look at the reluctance that we have to bill each other. We will look at the reluctance that we have to charge the right amount. We will look at the reluctance that we have to do the things that we have to do to make it neat for the people when they show up. And then we will look at where is our energy. Once you look at all of those four facts and you begin to slot it all together, then you can come out of a powerhouse of energy that truly comes out of no financial limit. I remember when I was a small boy, I used to think pop stars were really neat. I mean, I just thought they were like gods because I'd heard that they got £1,000 a night, you know? And I thought to myself, my God, I can't believe it. £1,000 a night. I mean, how could it be? I mean, it's just beyond my... I mean, £1,000. You roll up in the evening and you bang out a few Hey Jude's and you knock out at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. You get to go on with £1,000? And I was obviously in a hemisphere of influence, so it was very little. To me, that was a lot of money, okay? Then bit by bit, as I began to understand money and I began to earn some, I began to realize £1,000 a night is really not a lot of money. And in fact, they get paid £1,000 a night, but the roadies and the trucks and the cost $300 and they spend $200 on cocaine, $200 on dinner. You know, the gold lame suit was $60 and they wound up with £120, you know? So whatever they spent money on. And I began to realize that what we do is we create for ourselves in consciousness hemispheres or boundaries that we live in. They're called comfort zones. And our comfort zone exists in four areas, basically. We have a physical comfort zone, we have an emotional comfort zone, we have a mental comfort zone, and we have a metaphysical comfort zone that even though we don't know we're in it, we're in it. Okay, and today we're going to look at each one of those four areas because you've got to lock all of those things in to make it work. We live in a sea of consciousness. We live in what is basically energy. The amount of energy that you can experience is theoretically limitless. But in practice, it's not limitless because you have around you an area or a comfort zone through which it has to pass. If you've got an itty-bitty little comfort zone, it's like the whole of the life force has to like hurtle down the center of a little mint with a hole in it, you know, to get to you. And most people have very, very small hemispheres of influence. Going back to the pop star for a moment, if you think of like a thousand, how many of you earn $1,000 a night? Okay, so there's nobody in this room that gets $1,000 a night. The only reason you do not get $1,000 a night is because you have not expanded your hemisphere of influence and you have not reduced your emotions. Right? Because if I say to you, you can have $1,000 a night for doing whatever you do, that you begin to think about, well, do I deserve it? Is it okay? How would I do it? I mean, who in their right mind would give me $1,000 a night, you know? Like, why would they give it to me? And so, and then you begin to look at what you're actually doing is when you say those things, or if you've thought it, right, you're actually running up to the outside edge of your hemisphere of influence, touching the fence, okay, and saying, there's a fence here. There's no possibility for me to get $1,000 a night. And I'm saying to you, you're perfectly right. So what we're going to do today is we're going to take like a metaphysical Sherman tank and we're just going to blow a big hole through the fence. Then when I say to you like 6 o'clock tonight, perhaps, if I remember to say it, can you earn $1,000 a night? You'll kill me. You'll say, I can't get around on a grand. Forget it. You think I'm going to skip myself? Forget it. So the fact is that I this is just a realization that I came to through life was that as I suddenly began to detach from the emotion of money, then suddenly the amount that I could have dramatically increased. Absolutely, I wasn't involved anymore. Like suddenly, and then suddenly $1,000 a night, I can't get around in $1,000 a night, you know? There's no way, my expenses are $1,000 a day. You know, if I get $1,000 a night, I'm skint all day, I pay all my bills by midnight, and I'm skint by breakfast, you know? So I have to get more than $1,000 a day just to stay in one piece. So, having expanded your hemisphere of influence where you need $1,000 a day to just meet all the obligations, then you expand the hemisphere of influence to the point where you're getting $2,000 a day. So you pay all your bills at midnight and you've got a grand to go play with. You wake up in the morning, you're $1,000 ahead. It's just a matter of beginning to, like, literally spongy and pull and bungee and stretch what you feel about yourself. We live in a sea of consciousness. The physical plane is not absolutely, categorically not solid. And the Buddhists will say to you, it's Maya, it's illusion. And we will say to the Buddhists, you're right. Yep, it's Maya, illusion. But we don't live like it's illusion. We think this stuff's real. We think the wage packet is real. We think the money supply is real. We think the mortgage interest rates are real. We think the cost of beer is real. The cost of groceries, the gasoline has gone up another 2 cents a liter. You know, we believe in this stuff and we say these are real things. They're not. They are measures of people's emotions. If 255 Arab gentlemen in Kuwait suddenly need more cash, they turn off the oil goes up, it's passed all along a line, and 7 weeks later in your gas tank, it's a cent. It's to do with their emotion. If you didn't need the gas, them deciding to put the gas up would be no difference to you. So it's your emotion of actually having to have the gas. It's their emotion because they decide that however many dollars a barrel is not enough money. As we look at understanding that you live in a sea of consciousness, what creates that consciousness? Well, first of all, we have the physical plane, which is basically, it is basically consciousness. It is molecules and atoms, and then going down below molecules and atoms into neutrinos and quarks and bosons or whatever they're called, the physicists correct me, oh, and whatever else they are down there, you get lower and lower and lower and further away from matter to the point where it is understood that reality is basically wave motion. And what is wave motion? It's basically a type of consciousness. Now, a physical mountain, you look at a mountain and the mountain does not have the same kind of consciousness as you have because it does not have a mind with which to think, but it is a collection of consciousness. A plate of tapioca pudding is a collection of consciousness. Okay? $250 a minute is a collection of consciousness. Okay? Your creativity, whatever that might be, is a kind of consciousness. And you begin to look and see where we're moving already in what we're looking at. As you look at the world and you understand it's not solid, then the very next point that we come to is understanding that your physical body is not solid. It is a collection of consciousness, and you have the ability absolutely to have it do whatever you want it to do or not do as you wish. And you are basically the commander or the general of this vast empire of consciousness. that includes the trillions upon trillions of motions that are going through your body at any one given moment, the cells that are being born and being died, the detoxification, the digestion, the intake of oxygen, the processes, you know, all of that going on in your body all of the time, the nervous system moving information up and down the nerves at incredible speeds, you collating it, you taking information in through the visual eyes, looking at the world upside down. Every piece of information you ever receive is upside down. And people will say, well, that's my life. You know, now I understand why I'm in such a mess, because visually you're looking at me upside down. You see me upside down. I'm standing on my head. In your brain, there's a mechanism for turning me back round again. Okay, now you look at all of that going on instantaneously. The color, imagine this, a color of light, let's say red, orange, yellow. It's moving, it's touching the optic nerve at the speed of light. That's like 170,000 miles a second. And it's going along that optic nerve, hits the thing, it's upside down, the optic nerve transfers to the brain. The brain turns it back around again, and you look at it, and it's a red chair. It wasn't really interesting, but this is incredible things happened, okay? Where your consciousness has received all of this information and turned it around. So you are a general or a commander of this vast army of consciousness that is basically moving through a sea of consciousness, which is the physical plane. There is the physical solidity of the physical plane, and then there is the rest of the physical plane. And the rest of the physical plane is made up through emotion and mentality. Okay? What people feel is what creates the physical plane. And what you feel creates the physical plane. Now, I've got to give you 2 minutes on metaphysics. And for those of you that have been to my seminars before, at this point we ask you to play among yourselves while we catch everybody up. I will give you my brand of metaphysics. You can accept it, not accept it. You may have religious beliefs that are totally contrary to mine. I honor your decision to believe whatever you want to believe. And I ask you to honor mine. And if you don't, that's your problem. And off we go. I believe that inside of you, inside this sea of consciousness, is a divine energy, like a spark of the God force, of the living spirit, of the Christ consciousness, of the eternal Tao, or whatever you would like to call it. But a spark of consciousness, okay? I believe that spark of consciousness is an individualized part of all things, so that there is within you a connection to all things. That the consciousness within you, the life force inside of you, is the same life force inside the mountain. The mountain expresses it in less intensely because it does not have the same strength or power of consciousness, but it expresses it. A flower expresses it. A bird expresses it more than a flower. A flower more than a rock. But each one of those things expresses this consciousness. And a human being the most evolved type of consciousness in the physical plane, it's the most evolved way of going through. The animals have their evolution metaphysically, and they are the next one below us, and then the plants, and then the mineral kingdoms. That spark of consciousness within you, I call the higher self. Okay? You can call it what the heck you like, but I call it the higher self. Because basically, I don't know that there's any words to describe it. Okay? I believe that that higher self has come to the physical plane as part of a heroic quest. That you're not here by accident. That you didn't just plop here by some kind of cosmic mistake. And you woke up one day and it was a terrible mistake, and you're sitting in this wet nappy in Melbourne and you're crying and your mummy's stuffing a bottle in your mouth or bringing you to her breast and nurturing you, okay? I don't believe that happened. What I believe is that the divine energy inside of you knew it was coming to the physical plane, knew that it would be masculine or feminine, knew approximately the age, the types of things that would be going on, you know, knew whether it was 300 BC or 1985, knew the quality genetically of the consciousness that it would be working with. In other words, if you were born with a body that has, let's say, a genetic tendency to fall apart every Thursday, you knew that, okay? If it has a genetic tendency to, say, have a weakness in, you know, the strength of the hair, or the bones are not as strong, or whatever, or one of the bones is bent, and one leg is shorter than the other, you knew that. And you looked at that short leg and you accepted it. And you said, I don't mind, I really want to be in a physical plane so much, I don't care if I'm going to be walking around with one leg shorter than the other, because on this lifetime I'm going to experience semicircles. Okay, and so you came. But you came. I believe that the physical plane is such an incredibly beautiful, interesting, invigorating, spiritually expanding experience that you actually chose to be here, and that you had a vision of what it would be like. It would be like you decided to go to Tahiti for 2 weeks to Club Med, and you got a 3-minute video. You know, you did not necessarily know the name of the manager or what food they'd be serving on Tuesday or the fact that a buffalo was going to come out and walk straight across the top of your tent or something and break, you know, or whatever, but you knew where it was, how it was, the conditions, the energy, the light, the dark, the strength, your mother and father, the race, the mindset, the feelings, and you chose to be here, okay? That the physical plane, in my view of it, is basically a dimension of spontaneous energy, okay? You come into the physical plane and there is nothing, absolutely nothing, directing your consciousness. If you have ever asked the question inside of you, what does God want of me? The answer to a metaphysician is nothing. Nothing at all. All that God wants of you is that you become more of this life force that you have within you. That you step from restriction into freedom. That you step from manipulation into empowerment. That you step from ego into love. That is what is needed, okay? Because I believe that the life force or the God force that is a part of all things grows by dividing and individualizing itself into more and more separate parts. And so you are a custodian of a part of that energy. So therefore, you have within you the ability to be a part of all things and to be a part of God. Okay, this is a mystical, metaphysical view of the earth plane. You may or may not accept it, and I do not have any... I'm not involved in whether you accept it or not. I just offer it to consider. As we look at these concepts, we begin to understand that you come to the physical plane knowing what you're going to be here, and you come primarily to experience restriction. And there is nobody in this room that has not had a good long shower of restriction. It is almost like you said, where's the restriction bath? And they said, over here. And you've grabbed your little soap and your towel and you jumped in. Okay? They gave you restriction. It's like we live in a prison. But the beauty is, because of this connection that is inside of us, we are given the key. So we're not actually locked in. I believe that the reason we do this is this. That the inner us, the higher self, resides in an abode of light, let's say. It resides in a dimension where it perceives itself as a part of all things, and everything else exudes and expresses this light force, and it is in the light, okay? The reason we agree to come to the physical plane and come out of the light, okay, is because that allows us a chance or a time in our life or a period to concentrate upon ourselves. There have been a couple of occasions in my life, 9 to be precise, where I have perceived that light, the light that they talk about in the death experiences. You know, when the person's on the slab and the surgeons are banging away at the heart and they die and they come out of their body and they look at the surgeon going, hell, Harry, she's going to kick the bucket and do something. And then they go up the tube and at the end of this tube there's this light and there's this incredible love, this incredible magnanimousness, this incredible non-judgmental energy that it reflects back to them their life, and the people realize they've still got some things to do, and then some kind of energy usually shows up, some kind of angel or spirit or some kind of consciousness who says, not yet. And at that point, they twang down the tube, and they're back on the slab. Well, that's one way. And it's fine as long as the surgeon is up for the gig, because if he isn't, you stay up there in the light, and you don't get to come back down the tube. Working in trance states, and I have a background in brainwave techniques and in trance states that is quite extensive, and I've been involved since the late 70s, so almost about 10 or 11 years actually, early 70s. And I have found that there is a way of centering the mind so deeply that you can perceive that light, and I've perceived it on a few occasions. And what I learned about that light, which I want to share to you so that we can all come from the same place today, whether you agree or not, at least you know what I'm talking about, or you can at least appreciate what I'm talking about, is that that light, to my understanding of it, is impartial. It is magnanimous, beyond words. It would make you cry, the beauty of it. The light has so much love in it, but it's not emotional love. It's more like a deep, never-ending compassion for the human condition. A never-ending compassion for the beauty that lies inside of you. Okay? A magnanimousness beyond all words. And when I saw the light, I had a feeling that was overwhelming, that like, this is my heritage, you know, this is what I really belong to, is this light, and everything else is not really me, it's something that I'm doing for some reason that I don't quite understand, but basically this is me. And have you not had, ladies and gentlemen, that feeling inside of you, that sort of, that long forgotten dream, that you think, hey, I think I'm from somewhere else, you know. And people translate that, the mind of man translates that into sort of spaceships and stuff like that, or maybe I fell from Mars or something, you know, the man that fell to Earth kind of mentality. But it's a feeling that we remember that divinity inside of us. Okay, what I learned about that light, and what I learned about talking to people who've been involved in out-of-body experiences, people like Bob Monroe and so on, and talking and traveling with Denise, and talking with Glenn and various people that have been involved in these kind of experiences, is that almost every single person I've ever spoke to, and every book that I've ever read about it, right, everybody says exactly the same thing, more or less. And what they say is that the light's impartial, and it's magnanimous, and it is non-judgmental. Non-judgmental means that if you're an absolute scumbag and you've done these incredible things in your life, it doesn't say to you, na 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 na. It just shows you the scummery that you've been a part of. If you are a good person and you've done lots of good things, it doesn't honor you and bring you up to the front and sit you down and say, oh, well done, oh, fantastic, great job, mate, you know, terrific. It doesn't. It just reflects back to you what you are, and you would have a satisfaction of looking at the fact that you've done well. Okay, as we begin to understand that it is not critical, it's not judgmental, it's impartial, it leads us into a key understanding of the physical plane. Because if this power is impartial, that means you can do anything you want with it, providing you don't cause restriction. And you can actually cause restriction if you want, but in causing restriction to others, you cause restriction to yourself. When you cause restriction to yourself, you create around you an energy of stagnation. Stagnation. And has anybody here ever experienced in their creativity, in their life, stagnation? Can we see your hands? Right. Okay. When you experience that, that was not somebody coming along and laying a chip on you. It was you endorsing restriction over a period of time, whether it was a week, a day, a month, 10 years, and bit by bit, slowing the energy around you so much that you couldn't move out of it. That you literally entrapped yourself by the life force that was there. The way to get out of stagnation, we will give you in the course of today's lectures and seminars. How to absolutely step out of it so that you do not experience stagnation ever, ever again. That you literally, you'll be running till the very moment where they drop, bong, and they stuff you in a box and they say, Harry was a neat guy. He lived to 130. So, if you would consider these concepts, that you're a divine energy within a body, that divine energy is a part of all things, and therefore there isn't any limit to what you can become. There is no higher being, in my view, that is eking out abundance. There's no higher being that is saying, please sacrifice yourself. There's no higher being saying, please go and be a good person and shovel rice for these people. Please wash the dishes here. You know, please. It doesn't do that. That light does not ask you to get involved in that kind of consciousness. Only humanity gets involved in morality. Only humanity gets involved in sin and guilt and obligation. And only humanity feels bad if you do well. Only humanity feels bad if you do well. Because the life force could give a damn. Could give a damn if you're getting 1,000 a night. Or say you've got yourself up there and you're cranking your muscles and you're getting 10,000 a night. Or it's a good day, and you feel good about yourself, and you decided to charge $20,000 a night. It doesn't care. And all of this is extremely important, because the mind, in its hemisphere of influence, has one string of the barbed wire fences. What does God want of me? Okay? Another string of the barbed wire fences. There is a limit to how much I can have, because people won't like me. We seek the ego, the personality, seeks approval. Okay? At birth, the way that you get something is you scream your little lungs out and somebody gives you a breast or a bottle or something to save your life. And a small child cannot conceptualize, cannot sit there and say, I feel a bit hungry, mommy will be back from shopping in 20 minutes. I'll wait. It can't. It just begins to cry the minute it has a need. Okay? And we're involved in this kind of expressing the emotion and getting the thing back. Then, when we want something from mummy, we do things that will make mummy approve. Okay? So we scream like crazy. She says, I will give you an ice cream if you will shut up. And you say, ice cream, what does it taste like? She gives you a lick of it. You say, fine, we have a contract. Okay? And the kid shuts up. Okay? The mother approves. So the kid says, the way that mummy approves is for me to shut up. But I'll only shut up if she gives me ice cream. And you begin to get involved in a buying and selling and trading of emotions between the child and the mother. Go to this school. Why? Because you'll be big and strong like daddy. All right, I'll go. You know? And so on. The mother wants to get rid of the kid from 9 till 5, and the kid's going because it thinks erroneously that it's going to be big and strong like daddy. What it doesn't know is it has the capacity to be twice as strong as dad like daddy. In fact, the daddy's a total wimp. But at that point, you cannot conceptualize, you know? Because, you see, the kid might say, well, I don't want to be a big and strong. That's what I'm going to get out of going to school. I ain't going. But anyway, that's for another topic and another time. Understanding that we get involved in this business of seeking approval. Each one of you, and I do it as well, wants the world to like you, wants the world to accept you, wants the world to love you, wants the world to say, you're a neat bloke, you're great, we love you. That is the craving of the ego. You will never, 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 never get enough of, we love you. You can't. It's not possible. The minute somebody comes up and says, you've done a fantastic job there, all the little socks are clean, all the little dishes are in the shelves like little soldiers waiting to go to battle, and we love you, 2 seconds later, the ego has forgotten it, and it's then asking for some more approval. Well, I know you love me about the socks and the dishwasher, but did you like the dinner? You know? Yes, we did. The dinner was wonderful, Mummy, and we still love you. We loved you at 10 to 6, and now it's 5 past, and we still love you. And Daddy comes over to Buffalo, right, and puts them on the table, so to speak, and says, do you love me? I got the money. Oh, yeah, okay, Daddy, we love you. You know, and 5 minutes later, Daddy says, but do you still love me? You know? Yeah, sure, we love you. We haven't even had a chance to eat the buffalo. Yeah, we love you. And the ego seeks that acclaim, okay? To step into a mastery of money and henceforth into a mastery of life, you disengage from the emotion of whether people like you or not. And I would like you to consider that right here and now, because the minute you do, it is literally like unclipping this dead horse from your leg, you know, that you've been carrying around since birth. If you can say, I do not care what people think of me, and what they think of me is none of my business, okay, then you already open the hemisphere of influence in a way that you will understand as we talk some more tonight. Because basically, what we do is, a lot of what we do is heavily influenced by the people around us. The people around us that influence us the most are our families. And we come into the earth plane to experience restriction through family. It's almost somebody said, what would be the best way for these people to have restriction? And somebody said, oh, well, listen, design a family. What do you need for family? We'll give them a mum and dad, some brothers and sisters, some relatives and aunts. Stick them all in there for Christmas lunch and they'll really experience restriction, because by 3:30, the uncle will be punching out the brother, the aunt will be fighting with the mother about which way the gravy is supposed to be made, the kids will be arguing, dad will be drunk in the corner, there's more restriction there than they can get out of in a year. And that was what families are all about. Families are where we experience loving people unconditionally, you know? So you look at a person and you look at it and you look at their weaknesses and you look at their beauty, and that is how we come to learn unconditional love, is by being in a family. And most karma is in a family, most interpersonal relationship stuff goes on in the family, and we experience it like that. We experience a way of being restricted through that. Okay, moving on from this family thing, the ego then, being in this family, works with its approval. The very first place it seeks approval is in the family. Then it goes out and it has friends. The ego has school friends, workmates. And it wants the workmates and school friends to think it's neat. And it is influenced by what they want. Okay? What they want. We want you to do this and this and this, otherwise we won't think you're neat. We want you to be like this and this and this, otherwise we don't think you're neat. We want you to do dishes. I have to? Yeah. We want you to wash these dishes. What? Today? No, every day. What, just this one dish? No. 291 of them every day. What, for a week? No, for the rest of your life. That's what I've got to do for you to love me? Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I tell you what else you got to do. When the dishwasher's going around, you have to go around the whole of the house and find everybody's dirty underpants and hand scrub those. Once? No, every day. And then will you love me? Yeah, then we'll love you. And the male version of that is, we want you to crack out the door at like 10 to dawn, belt up and down the freeways, pressurize yourself totally stupid for like 19 hours a day, okay, with these concepts about working hard, and drag home enough buffalo or cash or moolah so we here feel safe. And if we feel safe and secure because of the sheer amount of buffalo you bring back, then we'll love you. So the male ego says, oh, all right, and goes, right, and dies. They say Harry died on the freeway. Three buffalo in the back seat. And so the ego says, the male ego says, if I agree to trudge wearily off to my execution, will you love me? Will you love me? If I agree to do that, if I agree to kill myself for you people so that you will feel secure, will you love me? And they say, yeah, we will. We'll give you a pair of socks at Christmas, and Mummy can wash it. The mastery of life and the mastery of money is to watch the sadness. I mean, how many of you have not had some of these feelings that I've described? Not had. Okay, there's not a single hand in this room raised. Okay. Do you begin to see, though, how you can begin to look and see how somebody somewhere sold you on those ideas? You know? They sold you the plan. Okay? And their plan, in all love and in all warmth and in all goodness, was basically a plan to manipulate you. Okay, they would never say, here is a book on how to be manipulated. Please read it and follow the instructions. Right? They don't do that. But then human beings very rarely say what they want or say or explain what their real intention is. And a classic example is the boy meets girl, you know, and he says, would you like to come on a date? And she looks at him and he seems like a nice, friendly kind of guy and fun and, you know, he looks good. And she says, yeah, Saturday night. So he says, fine, I'll pick you up at 6, we'll go to the cinema and then we'll go dancing. Okay, here's the contract. I would like to have your company from 6 o'clock till the end of dancing. I'll pay for dinner, I will take you, I'll pay for the petrol, I will pick you up, I will take you, I'll pay for the dance hall, as much as you can drink. Okay, that's as far as she's concerned, that's the contract. His contract has another 2 or 3 hours to run. And includes all sorts of stuff as, once you are drunk enough, will you make love to me? If you won't make love to me, can we at least have something going? You know, like, can we have like any one of these, like up to sort of like a scale of 1 to 9, hanky-panky? If you won't come across with all the goods, can we at least make some kind of progress? So the next time I invest $60 on this charade, okay, I won't have to start at naught. I'll be able to come in at about 5, and hopefully by then we'll be able to ring the bell and get the coconut. Okay? So as we look at that, we understand that basically within that, There's a tremendous amount of dishonesty. But humans cannot go up. I cannot say to you, come and have dinner with me, and then please allow 2 hours at the end for making love. You know, and we'll go to your place or hotel or the back of the parking lot. Is that okay with you? You know, and you can't say that because you say, well, that's incredibly dishonest. All you want is my body. And I say, no, it's not. I really enjoy your company. I love dancing. We're having a great dinner, but I do want your body, okay? So we don't deal like that. We deal through a covert, what is basically unholy way of dealing with life. Because the truth is too difficult to deal with. You know, the real truth is too difficult to deal with.